Blog Talk Radio.
Discussion and information, exchange of information about things of a Masonic nature. They truly are a remarkable group of people. Really, the maintaining the style of Masonry out of the limelight. Because we've been able to come to grips with things more important, more important than you know, the predatory capitalism, more important than showboating or celebrity. This is about understanding the nature of human beings and the nature of ourselves. So I hope you sit back and enjoy, and we have a good commentary today. This is the 182nd day of the year. It leaves 183 left, which is the bulk of the year. So we're in balance. And today, because I'm broadcasting from Canada, this is an invitation to all of you, to all of our listeners around the world. To join us in the celebrations. Fly your flag if you like, or fly ours if you will. It's a celebration of coming together from 1867, when three parts of the country were formed, agreed to unify. And it's been growing. It's an audacious country. It's so young. And it's we work hard to protect what we have, but we celebrate. We sit back today and celebrate the a job well done. And so that said, we have some good music. And the poetry today of Elizabeth Barrett Browning, some of you are familiar with that. And there's a poignancy to the work. It's her poem, The Cry of the Children. And I think it really does resonate with us here in North America. And particularly, I think there's aspects of this that carry around the world. We are imperfect, but saying that does not enable us to accept imperfection as the status quo. We struggle to and plan, and we learn how to improve the lot of our communities. And we know that harmony is a large aspect that will come, whether we leave a trail of misery behind to get there, or we believe that some so-called strong men politicians today are a believer, the resurgence of the efficiency of theocracy and autocracy and dictatorships is cleaner and necessary to the survival and the best interest of the greatest number of people, because the way that most of us live, and certainly the way that our Masonic values espouse, is a bit messy. It's a bit incomplete at times. We debate and discuss. We can agree to move forward, even though we have dissensions and we have disagreements. But we can also, it also enables us to connect and to have a more fulfilling understanding of issues. And it, certainly, hindsight is something that we don't necessarily shy away from. What we learn, it's like we're making decisions today, and 10 years from now, we reflect on the merit of those decisions, or the accuracy, if you will, as if we can, as if we can put time on pause to do that. We have, we're going through that, and the world has never really escaped that process of claiming efficiency. And along the way, of course, there's people that will try to amass great wealth. We have it here in this country. As amazing as this place is, you know, with all with the freedoms that we enjoy here, it's fragile. Our way of living is fragile, and it's subject to attack. And each time, we must stand up and push back and fight for what we believe in. How that fight occurs is not here taken to the streets. It's taken to our parliament and where we debate. It's taken to our community halls where we discuss. But then that said, just like Freemasons, human beings, they're creatures of habit, aren't they? Anyway, we have a that celebration going on, and to kick this off, who better than a little bit of Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli? This is a Toe Tapper. Thank you for tuning in. Yeah. Thank you. just stay with that kind of the kind of rhythm. I got rhythm. So music from the past that lingers. That lingers and still has a place. What better what better connection? Here we celebrate the development of our country. We don't have the history that some of you do. We don't. We have different history, our own history. But we weren't around 2,000 years ago, or we weren't around 1,000 years ago. We had people here, our First Nations were here, and doing quite fine, mind you. Thank you very much. And then the imperialism of Europe at the time, from many, many seafaring nations, discovered. Really, they were about to exploit indigenous people and use force to do it. And the people that were here had a sense of harmonics. They were at harmony with the environment. And for that, we must give them their full due. They are an influence, a bearing. Although suppressed by the mistakes of our previous governments and the support of people here, they are still standing, still strong, and still connected to the way of preservation and conservation that we are trying to instill. So you know, as we move forward here today, whether you are doing enough and are you ready for the changes that we are about to make that are going to be not imposed upon us, but necessary? That notion that we can move nature around to suit ourselves is coming to its logical conclusion. We can push our developments into the wilderness only so far. And we are reaching that point. That means that we are killing off the wildlife, killing off the habitat where they have existed from the beginning of their time. And that we have to moralize about that a bit to understand if what we're giving up, what we're losing. We are going to eventually kill off all the whales. And if we can't stop ourselves from doing that, I don't know if there's if I have a great deal of confidence that we'll be able to move reach our potential without patience. So let's connect the dots here and connect with the development of Canada, if you will, for this one day indulge us here on Masonic Effects. I'm going to talk about the development of lodges. A great deal has been written about lodges, a great deal. But I want to speak to you a bit about the symbolic development and what the world was like, particularly symbolism in craft Freemasonry. Wonderful, wonderful reference, and I recommend this it highly to any serious listener, student of the craft. In the second half of the 18th century, see with me, latter part of the 1700s, and into the 19th, until the union of the two former Grand Lodges in England in 1813, it's not necessary. I don't necessarily see this as dominance. This is the uniqueness of the history of the period, and it is what it is. And we can mock it, we can dissect it, and we can celebrate it for what it was and what it is, and employ the hindsight of 300 years. To bring us forward to the current time. And it's an amazing mindset when you open your mind's eye to consider all of the factors and influences at that time that did not stop all of those influences continue. Some were strong in the day, others have faded. Others that didn't exist in the day have emerged. In the second half of the 18th century and into the 19th century, there was often a great deal of confusion of thought on the symbols of masonry. In this 60 or 70 years, lodges developed from either a group around a simple floor drawing at the end of the room, in which the tables were already laid for the meal, which formed the main purpose of meeting, along with instructional work actually at the table, or at best a small separate room with a removable floor cloth in which the lodge symbols had been drawn or placed. They went through the era of representing the symbolic lodge artistically on a board around which the working lodge could be formed, to the time well on in the first half of the 19th century of the rise of separate and purpose-built lodges, or alternatively, the furnishing of rooms especially for the purposes of masonry, even on a temporary basis. In a number of the lodges, by the ruling of 1810 in England, on the position of the wardens in the south and west for all lodges, the wardens tended to lose some of the significance of their positions as representing the two great pillars. Instead, they became identified along with the master more with the three original grand masters, King Solomon, King Hiram of Tyre, and Hiram of Biff. The growth of the symbolism of the three pillars of wisdom, strength, and beauty, and the identification of those attributes with the three original grand masters and with three of the orders of architecture caused those orders to be identified with the master and wardens. The three lesser lights were originally placed in their positions around the center of the lodge, around the tracing board when it came into use to symbolize the working lodge, to enable the symbols to be seen and explained. The lights show the due course of the sun from its rising in the east through its meridian in the south to its setting in the west, and with the responsibilities of the masters and wardens becoming identified with those points of the compass. Compasses. The lights also move closer to those officers and had become established in those positions in England by the early 1800s. These lights have become identified with the master and wardens, and because of the wording of the ritual, which also identifies the lights with the sun, the moon, and master symbolically, the practice has arisen in some places of mentioning them in a different order, placing the south first. This quite overlooks their original symbolism to show the due course of the sun in the northern hemisphere, and they must, to preserve this, be seen to be in the east, the south, and west in that order. With this moving of the lights closer to the seats of the principal officers and the identification of the architectural orders used on the pillars supporting the lights with those officers, two curious departures from the old symbolism may be noted in many, many places. The first of these is the placing of the appropriate architectural column and capital on the distinguishing column of the warden. Masonic equipment manufacturers disregard the original reason for distinguishing the wardens by columns as the pillars at each side of the entrance. And when properly designed, they should have the lilywork, network, and pomegranates of those at the entrance of the temple, along with the two spherical balls, or bowls, as they are described in both Kings 1, chapter 7, and Chronicles 2, chapter 4. Although the anachronism about maps of the globe seems to have existed from the earliest recording in masonry, they are still the emblems of office of the wardens and constant reminder that our system is based on the temple of King Solomon. In our ceremonies, the pillars at the entrance of the temple have been transferred to the second degree and are no longer found on the first degree tracing bar. The lecture symbolism of the first degree is concerned with the master and the wardens representing wisdom, strength, and beauty, and with the original three grandmasters and their architectural symbols. It is not until after 1813 that the iconic Doric and Corinthian orders were identified with wisdom, strength, and beauty, respectively. 1813. And at that time, allocated to the master and two wardens. In 1790, when new chairs for the Grand Master and Grand Wardens were ordered by the Old Moderns Grand Lodge to celebrate the accession of George, Prince of Wales, as Grand Master, the chairs were adorned with the three orders, although not in the way that was settled after 1813. William Preston's lectures, which predate the Union, also refer to the Ionic pillar representing beauty and the Corinthian wisdom. We now identify the three pillars in the formal lectures with the master and wardens as representing the three original grand masters and attribute to them because of their share in the work of building the temple, wisdom, strength, and beauty. It seems likely that the method of the ancients was adopted by the Union. So, a little bit of the backstory on the evolution and development of the positions and the symbols. Remember, a great deal of time was taken to develop the ritual of masonry. We moved ahead constitutionally to put the framework in place of the organization. And that was onerous, but it moved ahead while in the background these discussions were taking place about what and how we would include in the ritual, what the ritual was about. So it wasn't necessarily invented or created. It was a movement forward. It was, again, the collecting what had already been, what was already in place, and moving that forward. So it tells us that masonry, Freemasonry, that thought, that notion, that expression exists outside of a constitution and outside of ritual and outside of symbolism. Now that's a world that we can imagine. If you can see that in your mind's eye, what is it that you're looking at? What is it? Today, somebody like me will not experience that. And even in the day, if we were in 16th century Britain, we wouldn't have experienced this sense of progress or loss. It was what it was. Now, I have the symbolism and I have the enrichment of the ritual and I have the benefits of a solid, well thought out constitution. And it is constantly being managed and tweaked and renewed. So to that often asked question, are we simply of a mind that masonry is reenactment, I would say that's the evidence that it is not. Because we're changing the detail, we're changing the concept gradually, genetically. It takes, how long does it take, what's the life cycle of these ideas? It takes a while. And as we can see when we look at this blue marble floating in the darkness of space, that that creativity is different in different places in the earth. And it's only our, I don't even know if we call it ethnocentrism, to suggest one is faster than the other, or what is necessary or the other, to make judgments, to add valence to all of this progress. It's the amazement of what we refer to as Freemasonry, Now sit back and hear, kids, just sit back and absolutely enjoy this. We're going to get to the commentary next. This is McCoy Tyner, one of my favorite artists. Again, from that audacious music that should never exist. Didn't these people know that they were property? That they weren't, they were suppressed and kept illiterate and treated as if they were less than what they deserved and what they were. Politics, the politics of racism. And listen to the beauty and the spontaneity of this music. The share. Yeah. Fill up your glass with whatever you're having today. Join me in the celebration. Tyner Trio. 1963, When Sunny Gets Blue. Beautiful, beautiful material. And thank you for that. You know, on this special day here, celebration, although I suspect some of you have been tuning in the World Cup and seen the ignominious ending of the careers of Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi. Talent, you know, in our lifetime, we may not see such talent again. And if there is, I hope it's even better. No more to say on that, on that topic. There's something I want to share with you about why, you know, it's a sort of a fascination amongst Masons, and more so in the past, I think, poetry. And I think poetry had become a bit lost in our contemporary educational system because it was taught by bureaucrats and it wasn't taught by artists. And if you want to suck the fun out of anything, you put a committee of bureaucrats to the task, and they have an uncanny ability to do that. And they're quite proud of it. You know, that's they have their place, but it's certainly not interpreting the arts. Or a lot of other things. Elizabeth Barrett Browning. She was born in 1806. This is when Masonry was really taking traction, wasn't it? I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach. How many weddings have we been at where we've heard that? That's a line from the mind of Elizabeth. We know that, I accept, and I hope you share, that the purpose of Masonry is like a particular type of paintbrush in your paint box. It's a form of, it's a more nuanced form of symbolism. It's the finest, the most beautiful way of, and I think for me, the accurate way of describing its purpose is that it expresses the emotion and the soul of the world, of existence. Poems can do things that sentences and a narrative cannot. It's like the symbols that we find around us that we, and where I am, they're very, very simple, very, very modest, undeveloped and unnurtured, but nevertheless, they're in an enriched environment. It's like the, you know, selecting just the right fly to put on the end of your line in that trout stream. And, you know, that's, for some, it's just get it over with. I don't find that people that will get up early in the morning to and creep up to their stream and take the time to be examining the hatch that day are at all clumsy. And I would think that as you are coming up to rise to the surface here and looking at the environment of Freemasonry, there's not a clumsy mind or clumsy personality amongst us. And so we can freely talk about poetry and poems. Elizabeth Barrett Browning, she is of a different stripe. She has had an influence from the Victorian period. She's very popular in Britain and the United States during her lifetime. You remember, that's when, although there had been war, you know, the Jeffersonian constant revolution, you know, the notion that he brought to the work of Franklin, Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, you know, and well, it was a blurring of the lines, and there was still a great deal of porosity around borders And there is today. We just perhaps on a lesser scale because there's a pushback. She was the eldest of 12 kids, and she began writing poetry at about 6 years old. And her mother kept a collected the work. All of her poems. At 15, she became quite sick, and she developed very intense head and spinal pain for the rest of her life. And later in life, she also developed lung problems. She probably had tuberculosis. And then the treatment at the time, laudanum, suppressed the pain, but it put more pressure on her health. But she campaigned, this woman, and this will resonate with a lot of us, she campaigned for the abolition of slavery, and her work helped influence reform of the child labor legislation. And her output made her a rival, get this, to Tennyson as a candidate for poet laureate on the death of Wordsworth. She was the first woman to be considered. Tennyson became the poet laureate. Attitudes toward women at the time being what they were, it was, I would say, who could say that Tennyson wasn't deserving? Who could say Barrett wasn't deserving? But these weren't people selecting the laureate to make a statement. Women had to be that. She was disinherited by her father for marrying Robert Browning. The courtship and the marriage were all carried out in secret because she was afraid of her father's disapproval. And so he tossed her. And so the couple moved to Italy in 1846, and she would live the rest of her life there. They had one son, Robert Wideman Barrett Browning, and they called him Ten. It's charming. And this woman, you can imagine, it's almost like the world cradled her in their hands. She died in Florence in 1861. And the collection of her last poems was published by her husband shortly after her death. You can imagine. She influenced prominent writers of the day, Edgar Allan Poe and Emily Dickinson. Anyway, I'm going to share with you something that I just found. I just needed to step back just very, very briefly from all the celebrating going on around me and think about, you know, in the news around us, we're hearing about the children being used as pawns in a big chess game at the borders of one of our neighboring countries. And it seems unconscionable. Little people that are likely diagnosably post-traumatic stress disorder are being isolated, frightened, put in cages, and they're being incarcerated for the sake of the greater good. Again, that argument that allowed somebody to use nuclear weapons. It's a frightening potential. It's always there. It's always there, that constant threat. Because it's not what they did, but how they tolerated it. And still do. Well, do ye hear the children weeping, O my brothers? I think she's speaking to Freemasons. Do ye hear the weeping children weeping ere the sorrow comes with years? They are leaning their young heads against their mothers, and that cannot stop their tears. The young lambs are bleeding in the meadows. The young birds are chirping in the nest. The young fawns are playing with the shadows. The young flowers are blowing toward the west. But the young, young children, oh my brothers, they are weeping bitterly. They are weeping in the playtime of others in the country of the free. Do you question the young children in the sorrow why their tears are falling so? The old man may weep for his tomorrow, which is lost in long ago. The old tree is leafless in the forest. The old year is ending in frost. The old wound, if stricken, is the sorest, and the old hope is hardest to be lost. But the young, young children, oh my brothers, do you ask them why they stand weeping sore before the bosoms of their mother in our happy fatherland? They look up with their pale and sunken faces, and their looks are sad to see. For the man's grief abhorrent draws and precious down the cheeks of infancy. Your old earth, they say, is very dreary. Our young feet, they say, are very weak. Few paces have we taken, yet are weary. Our grave rest is very far to seek. Ask the old why they weep and not the children, for the outside earth is cold, and we young ones stand without in our bewildering, and the graves are for the old. True, say the child, it may happen that we die before our time. Little Alice died last year. Her grave is shaping like a snowball in the rain. We looked into the pit prepared to take her. Was no room for any work in the closed clay. From the sleep wherein she lieth, none will wake her, crying, get up, Alice, get up, little Alice, it is day. If you listen by that grave in sun and shower with your ear down, little Alice never cries. Could we see her face, be sure we should not know her, for the smile has time for growing in her eyes, and the merry go her movements lulled and stilled in the shroud by the kirk chime. And it is good when it happens, say the child, that we die before our time. I'll ask the wretched children, they are seeking death and life as best to have. They are binding up their hearts away from breaking with a cement from the grave. Go out, children, from the mine and from the city. Sing out, children, as the little thrushes do. Pluck your handfuls from the meadow cowslips pretty. Laugh loud to feel your fingers go through them. For, oh, say the children, we are weary and we cannot run or leap. If we cared for any meadow, it was merely to drop down in them and sleep. Our knees tremble sorely in the stooping. We fall upon our faces trying to go. And underneath our heavy eyelids drooping, the reddest flower would look as pale as snow. For all day the worlds are droning and turning. Their winds come in our faces till our hearts turn. Our heads with pulses burning and the walls turn in their places. Two words indeed of praying we remember, and at midnight's hour of harm, our Father, looking upward in the chamber, we softly say for a charm, we know no other words except our Father. And we think that in some pause of angel songs, God may pluck them from the silence. But no, say the children, weeping faster. He is speechless as a stone. And they tell us of his image as the master who commands us to work on. Go on, say the children, up to heaven, dark, wheel-like. Turning clouds are all we find. But do not mock us. Grief has made us unbelieving. We look up for God, but tears have made us blind. Do you hear the children weeping and disapproving? Oh, my brothers, what ye preach, for God's possible is taught by his world's loving and the children's doubt of each. Look up with their pale and sunken faces, and their look is dread to see, for they think you see their angels in their places with eyes meant for deity. How long, they say, how long, O cruel nation, will you stand to move the world on a child's heart, stifle down with a mailed heel its palpitation, and tread upon your throne amid the mart. Our blood splashes upwards, oh, our tyrants, and your people shows your path. The child's sob cripheth deeper in the silence than the strong man in his wrath. To all the children that are working in forced labor, that are being treated as commodities everywhere, apologies. And know that good people are out there struggling to make it right. You're not forgotten. Golden Latin Jazz All-Stars. That's Tito Fuentes' band. He's no longer with us, but his music still rocks. Fantastic. Here, let me share a commentary for today. Thank you for all the comments and feedback that we've been getting. And to the Philippines, and to Brazil, and to Cameroon, and to Russia, and to South Korea. I'd say those Austria, you know, I almost want to say, you know, the icing on the cake is that we have listeners from Great, from the United Kingdom, from across Canada and the United States. But the, but it's hard, man, it's hard. When you know that we have listeners from India and China tuning in, it's not an expression of Masonic effects. It's an expression of free thinking Freemasons. And no, to all the despots that might be listening in, we are absolutely not a threat to the sovereignty of any nation. Come, sit down, join us, listen in. You'll find out. You'll find out. The secrets, we they're buried deep in our hearts. And if you're a pragmatist, you let it be known that the Freemasons around us are focused on assisting and improving. And that's not bad. They do their duty. They're diligent. They are authentic and sincere in their actions. And they're trying, just as you are, to understand what in the world is going on around us, you know? Anyway, here, this is Unconscious Bias Industry, 1984 revisited by a Mason. What in the world was going through him? If you haven't read George Orwell, get a copy of Animal Farm in 1984 and prepare to be challenged in a way that recalibrated Masonic material never can. He writes about the risks taken when we abrogate individual responsibility. Not good. It's a slippery slope to go from thinking based on facts to thinking to comply with authority, to adhere to an ideology. Not everybody, everyone wants to do the work needed to validate assumptions that are edgy. Unconscious bias is one of those. Years ago, psychologists conducted an experiment to test for bias. They flashed faces and asked participants to give them a positive or negative response. The findings were analyzed, and the experts determined that we could show bias toward a race without actually being aware. Unconscious bias was born. Fast forward decades later, we learn that science has been a little sloppy. Existence is. The assumption is not accurate. Josh Grajar laid out the consequence for us. The unconscious bias industry diminishes personal responsibility, renders well-meaning, guilt-stricken people vulnerable to baseless ideological re-education, and empowers an elite that is, by this point, inexcusably rebuking people for made-up sins. Oh, I know this is a less than a thorough explanation, but it doesn't stray too far from Mr. Orwell's delightful books on the subject of personal responsibility. I suggest you research the backstory of each book before you jump into them for those aha moments. Meanwhile, judge with kindness. Judge with kindness as a true Mason would.
Ma porte me parle des amours morts devant le feu qui s'éteint. Ce soir, c'est une chanson de bonheur dans la qui frissonne et je pense aux jours lointains. Que reste-t-il de nos amours? Que reste-t-il Et bonjour, une photo, vieille photo de ma jeunesse. Que reste-t-il des billets doux de mois d'avril, des rendez-vous, un souvenir qui me confond. Donne l'enfant des cheveux dorés, les évoluer à l'amour. Que reste-t-il de tout cela? Dis-moi. Un petit village. Un village si bien caché, qui dans un nuage de chers visages de mon passé.
Thank you very much for joining us today again on Masonic Effects. It's been a real want you to be kind and generous and particularly judge with understanding. Include yourself in that thinking. As you judge yourself, do it with understanding. Look into your heart. You know whether you're being as generous as you need be with yourself, and whether you're embracing the values that we talk about as Masons. You know the areas that you want and feel need to be emphasized. All of that, I put these out there as questions, but I'm not the one that wants and needs the answers. You answer those in a Masonic heart, always in a Masonic heart. And as a little send-off this week, thank you very much for the overwhelming support. This is well-deserved. And I want to say that we mutually appreciate the opportunity to study and listen to ideas out of and about Freemasonry that enhance us, stimulate. That said, I'm out of here. I want to leave you with something from a Canadian, a little treat from a Canadian performer. This is our West Coast performer. I believe she lives in Vancouver now. With her husband, another very talented musician, Elvis Costello. This is Diana Krall at the piano with Temptation. I look forward to being with you again real soon. Accept those Masonic challenges and commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. Cheers. See you soon, everyone. Happy Canada Day.